Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Humat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, welcome back. We've got another hour to go here, but guess what? After the second hour, which we are starting right now, we have another 2 hours of Leading Edge Medicine on another station.
Station X.
Station X. That's right. There is no such thing as Station X. But if you want to go to our website, lmclinic.com, you push on the podcast button near the top of the page, and it will show you where we are for all 4 hours every Saturday morning from 8 to noon. And we encourage you to do that. So again, go to lmclinic.com and push that podcast button. Hope you can join us for all or at least part. You're here now. If you've got a question for Dr. Mixon, we've got what we have now. We've got three lines open and our number is 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. I see here our call screener says somebody called in and wanted the phone number again. I only gave it maybe once. If you want to make one of the free health analysis appointments, so yes, you can make them on our website, lmclinic.com. But the number to call if you don't have a computer is 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. A little later, I'll remind you about the good news of all of the health analysis appointments that we were able to open up in early July for you. That's good news. Okay. 800-465-8770. Call that number. Right now, let's go to Tacoma and talk to Joe. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for taking the call. About a month ago, Dr. Mixon, you said that you thought you were sick with COVID-19, but mm-hmm. the testing showed no antibodies. Well, I had a similar experience. I want to go back now. My question, I'll give you my question right up front, and I would like if you would that I can tell my symptoms a little bit. The antibody test is 98% accurate for detecting antibody presence. But here's the question, and it applies maybe to both you and me. But is it possible or common for people to have been sick with COVID-19 without developing the antibodies? Now, I and my wife are patients of longevity for a couple of years, so we've obviously got a lot better hormonal balance and a lot better mm-hmm. nutrition than the average person. If I can go through some of my symptoms, I can, on April 6th at 6:30 p.m., and I know this from the cash register receipt, I was heavily sneezed on by the cashier, three or four quick sneezes, and only about 2.5-3 feet apart. And 4 days later, or 5 days later, I had deep chills. Could only satisfy them with a hot shower till all the water ran out, then back to bed. Had several other things. One was heaviness in the central chest, only when I breathed deeply. I had phlegm, sore throat, but I get these from time to time. But both my wife and I, who was there with me, but not directly exposed to the sneezes, she and I both had had very unusual stiffness and aches in our muscles. We were both fatigued. I had to get to sleep at least maybe 14 hours a day. One day while I was asleep in the afternoon, I heard my wife in trouble. I came out, and she was out on the patio. She had could not get up. She had crawled 40 feet on the concrete. She was too weak to get up. And I've had that same type of fatigue. I have had trouble getting up off my knees, where I never had any realization of any difficulty getting off my knees. Had vertigo. So the question again is, although the antibody test is 98% accurate for detecting the presence of antibodies, do people who have had the COVID-19 disease necessarily produce the antibodies?
Okay, let's address that. First of all, you clearly had a respiratory infection with systemic spread. Mm-hmm. And it is what we are now tagging as FLIs, flu-like illness. Okay, doesn't mean you had the flu. But there are enormous number of hospitalizations around the world for illnesses somewhat like you're describing. I was somewhat similar to what I got afflicted with. You know, my wife came home from China coughing and hacking, etc., and all of her friends and relatives in China with whom she had contact all caught the same thing, and then she came home and gave it to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were assuming it was probably COVID. My antibody test is negative, and her antibody test is negative. So the odds on the two of us being erroneously, you know, missed are just infinitesimal. And the odds on neither of us developing antibody, if it were COVID, are infinitesimal. Generally, part of your immune response is the production of antibody. You actually have three separate stages of antibody you produce, A, G, and M. The current test is mostly for G. We are not looking much at A and M right now. And that's just limitations of the current testing. But if you recovered, if you didn't die from it, I can virtually guarantee that whatever that virus was you got, you did make antibody to, because that's how your body beat it down and suppressed it. So I'm confident you made antibody to whatever that virus is. It's probably just not COVID. You got to remember that depending on where you are in the country and how big an outbreak of COVID there is at any given time, the incidence of testing that are positive for COVID, it runs from 5 to 20%. Most of the country right now, it's 5 or 6% of the tests will be positive, and 94-95% of the tests are going to be just something other than COVID. Mm. So, you know, the odds are, yes, you got a viral illness. Yes, you'd like to go back and slap that clerk upside the head for giving it to you. But, you know, and please don't slap her upside the head, by the by.
No, I won't do that.
Yeah, yeah. What you
put better shields between the
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I was at Home Depot a month or more ago, and the clerk, who was not wearing a mask, was coughing like mad.
Oh goodness!
And she said, "Oh, don't worry, I'm just a smoker. I don't have COVID."
Mm. Nice.
Put your mask on, stupid.
This young lady had allergies, she said.
Yeah. The problem is that being a smoker and having allergies doesn't keep you from getting COVID.
That's exactly right.
In fact, it predisposes you to getting the disease.
It increases your risk, yes.
Yeah. So, no, the odds are that you had something else. You know, there's a lot of viruses in this world, and they can make us really sick, and they can kill us.
Yeah.
There's things besides COVID that, you know, afflict human beings. And so if your test was negative, and I'd say go let your wife have a test, too.
Yeah. No, she did not. She could not go for the test that day.
Okay.
Wait, yes, she did. I'm sorry, yeah. I later went for the virus test when I finally found out where to get it, the nasal test.
Uh-huh.
And she was negative too.
But so
we're all on your system.
Yes.
Of good health. And additionally, I was taking PQQ, of course, the vitamin D zinc, quercetin, immune factor. So I'm thinking that possibly in our cases that the good stuff we were taking had much more effect in beating off the COVID-19 than our own immune systems.
Well, perhaps. Yeah, although, you know, generally, let's just kind of review a little bit about who gets asymptomatic or mild symptoms versus those that get sick and die, okay? Generally, the more robust your immune system, the faster and more effective immune response, including antibody, you will produce. And if your body responds really fast and jumps on this virus in a hurry, you never know you're sick.
That's
what the asymptomatic people are. People that don't get symptoms are the ones whose immune systems are hair trigger and just pound on this virus immediately. The people who get sick.
Four of us had that. We all had symptoms.
Sure. The people who get sick are those whose immune system is not able to suppress the virus as well. And so the virus gets a better foothold and does more systemic damage to us. And of course, the ones who die from it are those who have the weakest immune system and the virus basically overwhelms them. Okay. So, you know, you're a guy like me, 70-ish sort of age group, then the odds are our immune systems, while they're far better than the average American at our age, it's still not as good as we'd have been if we were in our current shape 35 years ago. All right. And so, any and every virus is going to be tougher on people our age as a group than it would have been had we been younger and more robust. That's, you know, that's just the way it works. So really, I'd say just the opposite of what you're thinking.
Okay.
Our system is designed to give you a robust immune system that will mount a defense, including antibody production, faster and more vigorously against whatever infects you than if you weren't on our system. So I'm.
Well, I could be sure of that. Yes.
Yeah, so, yes. Right. So the fact that you had negative tests to COVID almost certainly says you are negative for COVID. So you are still susceptible to that disease. So use reasonable caution. Don't disrupt your life, but use reasonable caution. But whatever it was that got you, like whatever it was that got my wife and I, you know, it's just part of living. This world is full of viruses.
And with that in mind, you know, that is such a classic reason, building the immune system. Thank you, Joe, by the way. We appreciate your call. That's, I think, one reason why longevity is so busy now, is people are waking up to the reality that building up your own immune system is the smartest thing to do, for goodness sakes.
No, I've had so many patients thank me for that.
Yes.
Written letters and in our phone reviews all the time, the common thread is that they're better off today than they were before they came to join our program.
Right.
And many have had symptoms. And again, I carry, you know, our older age group, and they have had symptoms, but they've all beaten it. And any of the antibodies testing that I've done on my patients have all been negative so far. So whatever affected them, they beat it, but it wasn't COVID. So I'm telling them all, okay, the index of suspicion and your level of caution needs to stay high. You need to keep washing your hands and wear your mask when you're in public places.
Right. But for those of you who want it's like there's an enlightenment going on for obvious reasons. The pandemic is creating this. People are realizing this is the time to get serious.
And it's making us busier than ever.
And it's making us busier than ever. We're happy about that, of course. But that's why we have extended the free health analysis appointments. We haven't described what is actually those two free tests. We haven't described what those two free tests are for probably a month or more. So while you're back here, why don't you just quickly, let's take like 2 minutes and describe those two free tests.
Sure. The hemoglobin A1C is a finger prick test, and it basically gives us a value for your average sugar level during the 3-month period prior to us taking that finger prick. and it tells us what your peak, the average of the peak and the trough is. And the significance of that is that as it is rising, your risk for many chronic diseases is rising. We couple that with your in-body, and in the in-body, we're looking at not just the weight and the BMI, but we're looking at your muscle mass. We're looking at your body fat percentage, your visceral fat level, and also your metabolic rate. Those numbers are very critical because a lot of times people may look great. They may be average, normal weight, but they have lost muscle mass and their visceral fat level is high, and that increases their risk for chronic diseases, and it slows down their metabolism even more, as opposed to somebody who has higher muscle mass. So our whole goal is to read that to you and to help you reverse or slow or delay the normal aging process by reducing your risk for chronic diseases. Higher visceral fat equates to higher inflammation. Higher inflammation equates to higher chronic diseases. They include degenerative joint disease, dementia, diabetes, cancer, susceptibility to infections. And we educate that. And if your hemoglobin A1C is rising, again, not only does it mean that you're either diabetic or pre-diabetic, but it also tells us the window about your health in the future. Are you at susceptible risk for dementia, diabetes, chronic inflammation, degenerative joint disease, cancer, stroke? And those are important things, and people don't equate them together. They go, okay, well, I'm pre-diabetic, so sugar can control that. Well, yes, but also remember, like Dr. Gilbert said earlier, that microvascular damage is occurring in the eye, he says. But remember, it's happening everywhere else. It's happening in your brains, your peripheral nerves, your kidneys. And if you don't pay attention to that and you're waiting, then you're getting sicker and sicker by the day. Yep. And then it's difficult to manage it. Then you're a risk factor and your body's defenses can't mount that response to protect you.
And then, excellent. Basically, you'll develop some basic understanding of what your health risks are. You hear Dr. Mixon and you, Samira, say all the time, if you don't measure, you don't know.
Well,
let us help you measure. It's the first little step. And so if you would like to come in and get these two free tests, the blood and then the special in-body, that is just a really smart thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's free. And we even give you $100 of free longevity supplements that you can choose from during that appointment. And a couple of masks, too, in case you still need a N95 mask. So to make your appointment, again, we've been out of them. June has been long gone, filled, actually in May. They were all gone and filled up in June. But the bottom line is we have some now in the first 17 days of July. And there's about 15, 16, maybe even 17 in each of our three clinics, ballpark. Tacoma, Linwood, Kirkland. Go to our website, go to and click on the button that says schedule your free appointment. And do that. Really, really easy to do. Okay.
You know, Jerry,
yes, ma'am.
As the gyms have closed down, I remember way back when we created a fitness plan, we gave everybody the books, and the binder to write their plan and to keep their progress notes, and we gave them the free bands.
Uh-huh.
Well, everybody's pulling out those bands and using them now.
That's right. So if you want to stop procrastinating, grab one of those free health analysis appointments. Again, we almost feel funny apologizing. You got to wait until July. But grab one now at lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. And if you don't have a computer, you can call us. 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. All right. Hey, all the lines are open right now. If you call right now, you will be next as soon as we come back from this short break. Call us at 800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. You call now, you're up next. All right, welcome back. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Pete Talbot here, and I've got Dr. Samir Umat. I've got Dr. Jerry Mixon with me here in the studio, and it's been a good day. We've got another 40 minutes here, and then we go to another station for the next 2 hours between 10 and noon. And so if you want to know where we are between 10 and noon, go to our website, lmclinic.com, and push the podcast button at the top of the page, and you can find out where we are for all 4 hours every Saturday morning. And a little hint also, a little, do we dare announce this?
I don't know.
We're going to have a fifth hour every Saturday coming up maybe in August. Let's save that for another.
I haven't heard everybody agree.
Rolling your eyes.
I had thoughts. Whatever. We'll talk later about that then. I keep my big mouth shut here. Okay. Let us go to Mary in Seattle. Mary, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi,
hello,
Mary.
Hi, I appreciate your show. I enjoy it every Saturday morning. So, but my question, I'm an old person, and I really like to have, I enjoy lettuce, fresh lettuce and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I've been cooking everything, all my vegetables, and I was just wondering, now you go to the restaurant and, are you all personally just enjoying fresh lettuce?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, spinach personally shifted out of lettuce to spinach.
I do.
But
I do
mean,
salads
you're eating it raw. You just give it a good wash and you enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sure.
So I really miss it, and of course I've put on a couple of pounds here, being. You know, what you're going through this COVID thing, and I'd like to get back to having more. I have spinach too, but I've been cooking it, you see. So now I think I will try some fresh vegetables.
Yeah, just wash it.
Yeah, just wash it good. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I'm a little different situation in that I only get raw salads at restaurants because my wife is Chinese, and Chinese culture considers eating uncooked vegetables to be barbaric.
Really?
Yes, you should cook them. And so everything gets stir-fried and, you know, wilted. So I never get much in the way of fresh veggies at home. They're all cooked. But I sure do enjoy them when I go to restaurants.
Yeah. No, so, we have everything. We have spinach, carrots, tomatoes, mushrooms, whatever you have to make your salad. Just make sure you wash them nicely. And even if they're organic and pre-washed, we have a habit of rewashing them again anyways. Mm-hmm. Now, cooking is fine. Some recipes in cooking say don't wash your spinach. You know, that's a personal preference. It's just the way I do it. I do wash them. But I enjoy them raw too.
Thank you. Carry on.
You're welcome, ma'am.
All right.
Take care.
You betcha, Mary. Thank you. Let's go to Tenino and talk with Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hello. Thank you. I had a question about your patients, which would, I'm not one, but that are their blood sugar is obstinate. Let's put it that way, blood glucose. Do you ever use drugs to lower the A1C? Let's say they're trying to do everything correctly. I mean, they do everything correctly. They exercise and they eat well, but they still, you know, they'll have that morning effect. You know, their blood sugar will be like in the 100s, you know, like 105, 108, 117, whatever, you know, goes down. But do you ever find patients that are obstinate like that? And what do you do for them?
Sure, we do. You got to remember we're treating basically an American population in which average blood sugars are and insulin resistance are ubiquitous over about 45 or 50. We measure several things. We measure peak sugars and peak insulin levels, as well as fasting sugars, fasting insulins, and A1Cs. It's not just where your sugar is. It's how much insulin you have to produce to drive that sugar down. And so many people will have perfectly normal sugars, but very high insulin levels in order to push that sugar down. And we call that insulin resistance. And people with insulin resistance, even if they've got supposedly normal sugars, are actually increasing their production of body fat, cardiovascular disease, dementia, more rapid degeneration of their joints. So high insulins cause a lot of issues to start with, even if your sugar is still normal. And right. What we'll often find is insulin levels start rising fairly early, then sugars start to creep up. People who have high sugars in the morning when they awake, that dawn effect, part of that is elevated cortisol levels. Mm-hmm. When your adrenals are kicking out anti-inflammatory hormones, the corticosteroids, those corticosteroids raise your blood sugar in the hours before you wake up in the morning. That's part of what we call the dawn effect. Your body is kind of ramping up and getting ready for the day. And so your cortisols rise, your sugars rise, your blood pressure rises, your pulse rate rises, and then eventually your body, you wake up. Mm-hmm. We use whatever we need to use, obviously. Our first choice is to get you with more fiber in your diet, to get you to decrease your evening meals so that you go to bed, you know, with an emptier stomach. We obviously are trying to get you to do more exercise. We tend to raise your anabolic hormone loads so you preferentially make muscle, because muscle burns sugar even when it's not actively exercising. So muscle helps lower blood sugars. We use supplements such as berberine, but we often use medications, you know, such as metformin, which actually has a weight loss, a anti-aging effect, as well as lowering blood sugars and lowering insulin resistance. So for medications, our first choice is usually metformin. I'm sorry, what?
Well, the reason why I asked that is because, you know, that I just see that what metformin does allows sugar to remain inside your colon. So, it, you know, a lot of people, it has some side effect or bad side effects.
Yes.
Or diarrhea.
Yes.
Lots of gas.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is there another medication besides that, or is that your, that's your primary?
Well, berberine is one we often use. Berberine is actually, it's a non-prescription supplement. It has a similar effect to metformin. But you know, the metformin is a dose response. And often if you'll start people on low doses, on say 250 milligrams once a day, and have them take it with food so it's buffered, they may tolerate it much better than that 1,000 milligrams a day that many people are taking. So start low. Go slow, give them time to adjust to it, and slowly work the dose up.
Yeah. So, Tom, I think what you're also asking is, you know, how much of the medical care will we provide? Where we do provide a lot of endocrine support and educate about other issues that Dr. Mixon just mentioned, we will not take over the responsibility of your primary care provider.
Nope.
We still want you to stay in touch with your primary care provider, and so should you need different medications or changes in their medication, they will be there to help you sort it out. However, what I have found in my practice is that a lot of my patients are able to reduce their need for prescription medications. Some can stay off of them for prolonged periods of time, and some cannot. It depends upon lifestyle issues, depend upon the disease progression, depends upon your genetic makeup. So there are a lot of factors that will impact on that. But with that diabetes that is affecting your whole body, we can pay attention to the other endocrine hormones and support those for you, so we can help you reduce other risk factors, dementia, cancer, coronary artery disease, cardiovascular disease. And those would be our targets to protect you from other issues that are going on with that diabetes or prediabetes, whatever it is.
You answered my question. I understand the holistic approach, because you're right. All, like we discussed earlier, your body systems are not isolated. They're tied together. Your body
Precisely.
Systems achieve homeostasis. But I just wondered from your standpoint, because I would eschew as much prescription medication as possible, but I just wanted to know what your first drug of choice is when all those other things have kind of been, have not quite been successful enough, what you would use if you had the choice.
And you know, until the last week or two, my first choice was an extended-release, slow-absorption form of metformin. Because the slow-release form causes less gastrointestinal distress. Unfortunately, the FDA just recalled most of the manufacturing of the slow-release metformin because it's got a contaminant in it that raises your risk of cancers. So, personally, I just dumped all my my slow release, extended release, and went to the old-fashioned fast release metformin. We have to make changes depending on what the current literature shows us. And right now, it's showing us that the one I used to like the most is probably not safe.
Okay. Well, folks, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Right,
take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Excellent. All right. Hey, well, we better go to a break. We're just a little bit late. When we come back, we'll talk with Ruth in Milton. She's 92, and she's got a question about weight loss. So that'll be interesting. And then we've got questions about an alternative to Xarelto for clots. We've got lots of reasons for you to stick around. Plus, maybe you have a question for Dr. Mixon or Dr. UMAT. Now's the time to call us at 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. All right, we can take some more questions here. Let's go to Milton and talk with Ruth. Good morning, Ruth. We are glad you called.
Thank you. I have been a member of Longevity for years and years and years, and I am 92, and I am very healthy. I have no problems, except recently I had to go to have some polyps taken out of my bladder, and a doctor did a very good job at it, and I am feeling even better. And so what I'm curious about is, many years ago, I lost 100 pounds with Weight Watchers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it gradually crept back on, and I've never been able to get the weight off since.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, how much of it has crept back on, Ruth?
Well, I weigh about 198.
Okay.
And you're how tall?
Well, I used to be 5'6". But now I'm about 5'2". I have a walker that I walk around the room with, and I'm confined right now because I just came back from the surgery and what have you. So I am on the 24th of this month, I'll be able to get out in the hall and do more walking and what have you. And so I injured my knee several years ago, and they didn't take proper care of me and keep me walking even though they were sore. And so, therefore, I've never kind of recovered the strength of my knees.
Okay. So physical activity is going to be limited, so we aren't going to be looking at a big calorie burn we can engender.
That's right.
So, our emphasis is going to have to be dietary,
yes,
as opposed to calorie burn. And you know, to some extent, it's a matter of calories in versus calories out.
Yeah.
But also timing. You know, I'd like you to look at really high fiber, low simple carbohydrate diets. With most of your calorie intake in the morning and midday, with try to decrease your evening eating as much as possible.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is we are a senior facility at where I live, And we have been confined because of this darn virus. And so, therefore, we don't go to the dining room anymore. Mm. And so our food is delivered to us, a set menu. Well, I try to never clean up my plate. I just never do that. And I try to make good decisions, but I just wondered if there was any...
It's hard in those facilities. I've heard that too, you know, because the salad is usually just some lettuce, and then the meal is carbohydrate rich, and then there's always a dessert that goes with it. And if they're delivering it, it's really hard
to not to eat it. Yes, it's sitting there staring you in the face, screaming, "Eat me, eat me."
I know what you mean. And I'm surprisingly healthy. My blood pressure is amazingly good for an old lady, and I definitely have no complaints that I've been very fortunate.
Yeah.
So I was just curious. So
sure. There are a few options, I think, Ruth. And given your age, I would do is maybe reach out to your longevity doctor and maybe personalize this a little bit. Since cooking is not under your control, you might need a little bit help with when to eat. Like Dr. Mixon was saying, don't eat late at night. But I think I'd like to know you said you're pretty healthy. I'd like to know what your sugar levels are and you're not getting too hypoglycemic, and maybe giving you some form of an intermittent, maybe Mediterranean DASH type of a diet protocol, because those have stood the test of time. Mm-hmm. I know Weight Watchers counts points, and maybe we can kind of incorporate some of those points into your routine. But I would say what he said, high fiber, multiple grains, low high glycemic index foods, definitely no sugar, but maybe incorporate some healthy fats and constrict the hours in which you're eating them because your physical activity is restricted, definitely not eating late at night.
You know, I had a patient several years ago too who came up with an interesting idea in that because of health issues, she ate out most of the time.
Okay.
And what she did, I thought was kind of interesting, she would ask them to bring her a box.
Yes.
When they brought the food.
Yes.
And she would look at what she plans to eat, and she put the excess in the takeaway box right up front.
Yes.
So she didn't eat it.
Yes.
It was now off her plate.
Yeah.
And she ate what was left on the plate and took the rest home for another meal.
I've heard nutritionists say that. It's very...
I'm not sure how you would do that in her setting, though, when they're delivering it to your apartment.
It's hard. Some places have dietitians and nutritionists and some don't. And so if they're giving the same meal to a 60 and then the same to a 90-year-old, then there's very... hard to separate it, tease it out. Then
the metabolism on the 90-year-old is much slower than that of the 60-year-old.
Right, then you would have to say cut away that. But that's why I said if you talk to the longevity doctor, they might be able to tweak it a little bit.
Well, and the other question is...
The longevity doctor in Tacoma that I go to is a nice guy, and I had my blood tested and the whole nine yards, and so didn't recommend very much at all because I was in such good condition.
Sure, but
if it's not broken, don't fix it.
But your excess weight is something that, you know, we want to help. I wonder, does your facility have a dietitian, a nutritionist associated with it doing the meal planning? Because,
therein lies a big problem.
I said to them, don't give me any potatoes or noodles or rice or any of those things, and they're good about that. They
good.
All right.
They don't give those to me, and so I am very fortunate in that regard. So
All right. Well, it sounds like then our next step is to do something kind of like we were talking about the lady with the box.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a takeaway box, but you may need to just before you start the meal, take what you consider to be the excess that you don't want to eat. Get that off your plate. Put it in something that's going to go back to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that you're not tempted.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
Ruth. All right. Take care. Good luck. Thank you for calling, Ruth.
It's all right.
What a wonderful lady.
We've got more to go here. We've got 15 minutes to go on our second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. And then just a little reminder, starting at 10 o'clock until noon, we will be on another station. And if you'd like to find out where that is, the call letters and position on your radio, just simply go to our website, lmclinic.com, lmclinic.com, and push on the podcast button on the top of the page, and it'll show you where we are for all 4 hours every Saturday morning. And we'll be back before you know it. We've got questions about Jackson-Weiss syndrome. I've never heard of it, but we're going to hear about it when we come back. Let us go to Bothell and talk with Linda. Linda, welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
My question is about, thank you for taking my call, and my question is about Xeralta. I've been pretty healthy most of my life, and not that I'm perfect or anything, but I was had a few episodes of aphasia, which sent me to a to get an MRI on my brain and also ultrasound on my neck by my primary care. And the ultrasound showed that I had a clot in my jugular vein, which they were perplexed about because that's not common at all. And the instances of it, I have not had any of the things that cause it. So anyway, they put me on Xeralta about 3 months ago, and I just don't want to be on that drug all my life, but they're acting like I have to be on it. And so my question is, number one, why do they say that it'll cause you to have blood clots if you go off it? And why can't I get off it? Because I fully believe that whatever that was they saw may not have been a blood clot, because I've never had instances of that. And I've had those checks, you know, where they come around to your home, or they come around, I can't remember the name of that group, but they come around.
Yeah, there's a life insurance company that does those screenings.
Well, and there's Lifeline screening. Yeah. Lifeline screening, yeah. Okay, well, it's interesting that it was a venous clot, a jugular as opposed to carotid.
Carotid, yeah.
Yeah, because usually the arteries are where we see these issues.
That's right.
It's very, you're right, it would be very rare to get it on the venous side. Unless you had a thrombophlebitis of some sort.
Yeah.
And I've never heard of that in the neck.
Yeah.
So,
no.
Odd. Well, okay. Xeralta is one of the newer non-vitamin K inhibitor drugs. You know, the old sodium warfarin, the Coumadin, it basically inhibits vitamin K activity. And by doing so inhibits our ability to form clots. The problem with the old warfarin versions are that the incidence of inadvertent bleeding is relatively high, and you have to have tests very frequently, every couple of months, to kind of measure the clotting activity that you've still got. And a lot of things, such as the vegetables in your diet and physical activity, can alter the effectiveness of the drug rather dramatically. So the newer drugs, like the Xeralta, they're basically a single dose. You don't have to run all the INR testing. You don't have to follow them with a laboratory as much. And they have a lower incidence of accidental bleeding. So they are where the technology is going, because they tend to be safer. They also tend to be far more expensive.
Sure.
Which, of course, the pharmacies love, or the pharmaceutical companies love.
Yeah.
I guess the, you know, why and should she stop it? And I think, isn't that, that's just risk profiling. You know,
precisely.
If you are at risk for a blood clot and a stroke, then yes, you need to take the medication. But if you're not at risk, then yes, you have a right to say, well, what am I protecting myself from?
And the question is, how long should anyone take it?
Yeah.
You know, it used to be when these first started, they were saying a year. But now many people are just saying once you're on it and you're probably going to take it forever.
Well, I guess it depends upon. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. The other question I have about it, I'm a CNA and I do a lot of in-home care for elderly, and most of my elderly clients that are on blood thinners are also on something else because of stomach bleeding. And this is what prompted me to want to get off this. I don't want to end up 20 years from now having bleeding stomach problems. I'm 72 now.
And the question is what? And what is the risk of your, you know, throwing a clot? And again, I'm a bit perplexed because you're the only person I've ever heard of with a clot in the jugular veins. I've been around medicine for 40 some years and you're the first one that's told me they actually had a clot there. So
here's the other thing. I don't trust the medical. I have never, ever since I was a hippie and I went into natural stuff back in the 70s. And so I've always eaten fairly good, not consistently, so I do have some issues, but I don't trust the medical profession. They wanted me to do an MRI of my neck with contrast, which I refused to do. And because they were thinking it could be some kind of cancer putting it there. Well, I feel fine. I feel great. I'm doing really good. So if it's a cancer, it sure isn't affecting me in any way.
Well, so, yeah, but if it's a cancer, it's not affecting you yet. There's a difference.
Yeah.
Although if it's causing you to form clots in a very unusual area that is affecting you, that would be a worrisome effect. You know, here's my suggestion. Anytime things don't make sense, go get a second opinion. Go find someone else to look at those studies. And if necessary, do a literature search and see what they can come up with, you know, to discuss this with you. I don't like it when doctors say, this is what you're going to do, and here's the prescription, and go forth. I am of the firm opinion that the doctor's primary job is to educate the patient. Unfortunately, in this particular one, since you're the first one I've ever heard of that had this particular presentation, I'm a poor one to educate you. You need someone who has seen this several times, who knows what the, you know, the physiology behind it is all about and can discuss it with you intelligently. And that would probably be somebody that specializes in vascular abnormalities. So I'd go find somebody, a good vascular person, and maybe two vascular people. If you've got something really unusual, you know, the other guy may not have seen it either. And they may be kind of grasping at straws just like I would be. So, you know, you might want to go to a center like the University of Washington, where you can get a team of people that between them can come to a reasonable consensus, but make it clear you want to be educated, you want to know why, you want to know how, you want the reasoning behind it, okay?
Correct, that sounds like the thing I should do, so... But all this started, you know, those tests started because of three aphasia instances back in 2019 that happened over so that's where it started. And
let's face it, aphasia is a scary thing.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, for the audience that doesn't know what aphasia is, this is a lady who suddenly couldn't speak.
Yeah.
she had loss of words.
Right. Yeah.
You know, which, this tells us bad stuff is happening in the brain. And you obviously don't want that to progress. So Go see some neurologists, get a, or vascular folks, get a really good second, third, fourth opinions on this before you make up your mind what you are or not going to do, okay?
And with that, Linda, thank you for your call. We appreciate it very, very much. Hopefully that has been helpful. You know, this reminds me, Jerry, of what I know goes on all the time at Longevity. You mentioned to her, go where there can be a team looking in. And we do that constantly at Longevity with our patients. Sometimes, you know, you can't expect every doctor to have every answer for every situation. And so how do you handle, for example, what you might call difficult cases at Longevity?
Well, every Tuesday, we have a conference call between all the docs, and we're sitting at our computers so we can see all the medical records. And each of the physicians is allowed to call up their more difficult cases and get all, everybody kibitzing on it. So we can all see the records, and we can all have input. So if it's a tough one that this particular doctor is not comfortable with, he's got, you know, five, six, seven people looking at it and saying, hey, let's think about this. Let's try that.
Well, the other aspect to this whole thing is that our appointments are, let's say, an hour long.
Yes.
Yes.
When you have enough time to talk, to question, to dig, do a deep dive, really dig into a situation, do research right there, bing, bang, bung on the spot. That's a tremendous advantage that traditional medicine doesn't offer often.
Yeah, yeah. And the bing bang is fine. I disapprove of my doctor's using bongs, but
He only said bing bang.
No, he said bing bang bong.
I said bing bang bong.
He threw the bong in there, but I said no bongs.
Please come back.
But our.
Here we go.
But, you know, I get emails from our physicians several times a week, and I'm sure, you know, Samara does too. And often they will address the emails to Samara and myself.
That's right.
And, you know, they're asking questions. They're wanting us to send them some papers or to discuss an issue with them. And we sometimes answer it by email. Sometimes we get on the phone and we chat with the doctor about it.
Yeah.
And again, this, there's so many advantages to being a patient at Longevity. I tell my friends, I don't know how you can't, if a person is dependent exclusively on insurance-based medical protocol, insurance-based medicine, which is often 5 to 15 years behind the science.
And I would never accept it for myself.
Right. And so that's the advantage of Longevity. And again, the first step for those of you who, there's so many of you we know because you're starting to call us in huge numbers. You're starting to wake up to the reality. Wow, is it time? I'm going to have and take advantage of a free health analysis appointment. Boy, we encourage you to do that. You get the two free tests, the blood and the special in-body. And you also get $100 of longevity supplements for crying out loud. What a great time to take advantage of that. And we have opened up. You have to wait till July. And that's frustrating, I know, and we apologize, kind of, but that's the way it is. And so you can go to our website, lmclinic.com, and make an appointment in either our Tacoma, Linwood, or Kirkland Clinic at lmclinic.com. The two free tests, the $100 of longevity supplements. Make the appointment. Take that first step. If you don't measure, you don't know. Let us do the measuring for you. We'll see you next week.